If you had a hole in your pocket that caused you to lose your loose change, you'd either sew it up or at least stop putting your wallet in it. Yet there are figurative holes in our pockets causing us to lose our hard-earned dollars every day. In parliamentary procedure, a motion to reconsider allows us to bring back a matter that has already been voted on, even after the final gavel tap. Welcome to Reconsidered, a podcast allowing us time to look back at the experiences, relationships, and skills gained through the FFA in order to make the most of our future. The final tap of the gavel has sounded. Let's explore a motion to reconsider. I'm Adrian, former state FFA officer from Oklahoma, and this is Reconsidered. This is our second episode in a series on recklessness. Our first episode was all about time. But it isn't just time we waste, it's money too. Forbes put out a list of 7 simple steps college students should take to build financial literacy and responsibility, and I think it's a pretty good starting place. Number 1, build a budget. Number 2, open a checking account with a debit card. Number 3, take advantage of your student ID. Number 4, choose and use a credit card wisely. Number 5, find an on-campus job before you arrive. Number 6, become a saver. And number 7, think ahead. It is a pretty good starting place, but our next guest has even more detailed advice for us. Elio Chiarelli is a financial advisor and former state and national officer, and he has some insight for us on how to, quote unquote, sew up our pockets. Hey, Elio, welcome to the show.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on.
I am so excited for us to get to learn more about you and dive into some answers when it comes to being financially responsible and financially not reckless, because that's something that is definitely a challenging thing to learn as we go into college and start being financially independent. But would you go ahead and start by just telling us a little bit more about you?
Yeah, for sure. I'm talking to you from down here in the Sunshine State here in Florida. And it's originally from Pennsylvania. I was in a state officer back in Pennsylvania. And gosh, I guess it's been a while now, 20 years almost, back in 1999. And moved down here to Florida for my graduate program and went to the University of Florida for my graduate degrees and just never left. It's kind of a really sticky place. Got involved in the finance business. Really during my graduate program, shortly after my master's program, and just really stuck with it. Really enjoy being involved in the financial space. I really act as a fiduciary for wealth management accounts and corporations. I also help businesses with deferred compensation, executive benefits, and also specifically in the agriculture industry, farmers and ranchers and growers transitioning their wealth, transitioning their their ranches, their farms, their groves to the next generation. So I get involved in a lot of that kind of stuff on the agricultural side. But, kind of how I got here and a little bit more about what I'm doing.
That's awesome. It sounds like you get to wear quite a few different hats within the financial world.
Yeah, it's a really cool, there's obviously common themes throughout, but it's a really cool way to use multiple skill sets and multiple arenas. Kind of keeps your days interesting. Definitely wear different hats, and there's no 2 days that are the same.
So what was it that sparked your interest in finances?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've always been kind of finance-minded, business-minded, entrepreneurial in nature. That was something that kind of started in my FFA career and time with FFA through a lot of the things I was involved in. But really, towards the end of my graduate program, one of my friends kind of got me involved specifically in the finance business, working with kind of farmers and ranchers and growers with wealth transition. And that's kind of my entry into it. And then it really blossomed from there and grew from there.
I feel like I have so many questions for you about finances. Whenever you were transitioning from being kind of under the umbrella of your family to being financially independent, what was that transition like as someone who is really interested in finances?
You know, that's always it's going to be a very different circumstance for every person, right? I mean, there's some people that have to be financially independent pretty early on. And there's some people that certainly can come under the reign of a parent or guardian or family member for an extended period of time. So it's going to be very different for your circumstance. But here's my thought on it, is at the end of the day, we have to take responsibility for our own finances as if we're earning every dollar. There's always a saying in finance that free has no value. And it's so true. If we get something for nothing, it really doesn't have nearly as much value to us as if we earn it. So the more we can work towards earning it, the more value we put on it, and therefore we are able to and willing and interested in managing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. One of the reckless decisions I made with my personal finances in my freshman year of college, which was also the same year as being a state officer, I had worked on a project and made about $1,000 from working on this project, and chose to spend it on a camera lens that was about $1,200. And right. Photography was something I was interested in.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was just one of those things that was totally not a smart decision. And I ended up selling that camera lens here rather recently to help pay for right. some college expenses. But as college students are thinking about ways to not be making reckless decisions like I did, what would some of those tactics be?
You know, that's really good. The example you gave is actually a really good one, which is you received funds that were unexpected from something you did. Funds were X numbers, and instantly the reward for that is to purchase something that is kind of on our wish list, mm-hmm. right? And what happens way too often is funds we receive are less than the price of something on our wish list. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we can stretch our $1,000 into $1,200 or $1,500 or $1,800. It's very, very common. And so here's some tactics that I think are really good. One is to put some time between the decision to purchase and the purchase, and not months or years, but gosh, even a week or two could be a huge benefit. I think that's really important for us to do. The other thing is to absolutely add those funds to your normal budget that you have, which I'm sure we'll get to budgeting, but nonetheless, add it to it. So if you received your whatever you're normally living off of, you really allocate those different areas: food, entertainment, savings, technology, whatever you normally kind of allocate your dollars to. You simply allocate those same dollars to those areas as opposed to allocating them all to something that you want. Mm. I think that can be really good. And then the third thing is just we want to kind of live within our means in terms of not getting a chunk of money and spending it on something we really want, but rather allocating it within our normal spending to avoid the I'm feeling richer effect. Mm-hmm. And I guess the last tactic that I would say, probably this, maybe I should have used this one first, is that to remove dollars from the account in which we spend them normally. Here's what I mean by that. If you have a checking account and you have a debit card, and that's the checking account that you linked all your stuff to, like Apple Pay and Amazon Pay and all of those different mm-hmm. technologies and stuff, whatever account those are linked to, you want to remove dollars from that you want to set aside for future things or savings. If it's in there, you will absolutely spend it. If you have $1,000 in there, you'll spend it. If you have $10,000 in there, you'll spend it. If you have $100 in there, you'll spend that. So it's again going back to the I'm feeling mm-hmm. richer effect. It's just, it's behavioral economics.
That's such a real thing. The big questions that I have, and a lot of my friends have had here in college, just in conversation, is like, where do you even start to develop a really great budget? If you could describe like budgeting 101,
right.
which I know is probably like a huge question, where do you even begin?
Here's why budgets don't work. I'll tell you why they don't work. Is because they're cumbersome to create. We have no idea how much we spend in different areas. And we don't stick to them, just like anything else. That's why they don't work. Mm-hmm. So there's a tool and resource that allows us to kind of avoid all three of those things. And that is any of the the app-based, technology-based budgeting things. So Mint.com. Mint is a really good one. I've used it in the past, but there's dozens of them, right? So what you do is you create an account. You link to that all of your different accounts. So your credit card accounts, your checking accounts. So if you're an Apple Pay person, link your Apple Pay. If you're if you just have a traditional checking account, just do that. Whatever you do, your normal transactions, that's what you want to link to that account. It tells you what you're spending in the various categories. Because if you say, you know what, I want to spend $100 a week on food, but you actually spend $200, well, a budget didn't help you because that's what you're spending. Now, I'm not going to say you shouldn't be spending less. It's just a matter of what you're currently doing. So allow the program to tell you what you're spending in those areas. Mm-hmm. Then from there, you create a budget in the program and you can add as many categories. You can make it as simple as you want, 3 or 4 or 5, or you can have 27. It doesn't really matter, whatever you're comfortable with. And what it allow you to do is once you see what you're spending in the different areas, then you set a budget for those areas and it automatically lets you know. So if it's the 15th of the month, but you're already 90% of the way through a given budget, it's going to send you an email. It's going to say, or a text, whatever you prefer. You said you were going to spend $200 a month on X. It's the 15th and you've spent $195. It's just a little poke in the side to say you might want to watch that over the next 2 weeks. And it kind of keeps you on track. What I like to say about those programs is that they're really, really helpful to give you a guide. And then you're not having to worry about entering a bunch of data in some budget. It pokes you along the way to keep you on track. And then it's fully adjustable. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. When that extra cash pops up, just like I had, should we be putting that towards savings? Should you immediately be putting that towards paying off your student loans? What advice would you have for like that kind of a decision?
Going back to behavioral economics. Behavioral economics tells us that habits we create when we're young and working our way through becoming financially responsible for ourselves are habits that we will carry out for the rest of our life and be very difficult to change. Mm-hmm. So just know when you're, in college and trying to figure these things out, the efforts are going to be multiplied because they're going to extend through the rest of your life. So here's some general rules that, and if you talk to several different economists and if you read several different books, you'll probably get different percentages and all this, but this is just Elio's thought. We want to save 12% of income for, call it future savings, 12%. If we can save 12%, if you can do that for 30 to 35 years, and that grows at an average rate of return, 6-7%, you can replace 70% of your income in the future. If you can do that now, even if it's a small amount of money, if you get used to every time you get a new asset or a raise or a new job, or you finally get your job that you're going to be in when your career, if you're mm-hmm. used to just putting away 12%, then you'll always do it. The other thing is we always want to have about 3-5% of our income going to what I call short-term savings. The rest of it, all of the rest of it, you allocate it for your own situation. That it could be debt service to pay off loans. It could be car notes. It could be saving for a backpacking trip in Europe. It doesn't really matter. Your groceries, your rent, all of that stuff, all the rest of it. But if you can put away 12 to future, 2, 3, 4 to the short-term savings, then I think you're going to be in a better situation kind of moving forward.
I think logistically that helps me even just a lot more to think about that as a percentage rather than necessarily a specific dollar amount. Because as a college student, even working 20 hours a week and making, maybe $500 a month, that's not a very high number. So, Elio, what do we need to know about student loans?
They're not created equal. So there's student loans that come from the Department of Education, whether it's subsidized or unsubsidized. On the private side, usually, unless you're doing multiple private loans, you're borrowing against the same sum of money, and it has a set interest rate. So what we want to know, or what is to know about that, is that when you go to pay these things back, first of all, when you graduate, on the, we'll stick with the Department of Education ones because it's probably going to be the most common scenario. It's going to calculate a payment for you. It's going to base that payment off of your financials. But just know that if you just make that payment, you'll likely never pay it off. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is we need to set up a comfortable payment so it doesn't put us in a financial burden, but we know that we're going to have to allocate more resources to that in the future. After you graduate, when you look online, you're going to see each loan, and you're going to see the details of each loan. It's going to give you a total, but each one is going to be on there individually, and you can choose to pay back the highest interest ones first, and that's what you should be doing. So the unsubsidized highest interest ones first, pay those back first, and to kind of mm-hmm. work through those. And then I would avoid the trap on the private side. After you graduate, you're going to get lots of mail, and you're going to get lots of input to refinance all of your government student loans into one private loan. And I would avoid that, generally speaking, just because, again, you take all of that and you wrap it into one, and they give you this new payment. They kind of stretch it out over a longer period of time, and you end up paying a lot more interest in the long term.
So with getting closer to graduating from college, I know that there are definitely some expenses that happen between that point and the day that I'll actually receive my first paycheck. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those expenses are that I can be expecting between that point of graduating and getting my first paycheck?
Yeah, some of you might be renting apartments now in college. So you're familiar with, when you go to rent somewhere, you got to put, a bunch of money up front as a security. And then you got to pay the month's rent, or maybe sometimes first and last, or some of you may be familiar with that. Some of you may not be, but if you're not familiar with it, it's something to kind of know and prepare for, whether you're, so you just get a job, you move to a new place, that place costs money. You're either going to rent it or you're going to purchase something, most likely rent up front. And so you need to be prepared, depending on your area, on what that amount is. Think about where you want to be. Now, I know this could change drastically because we don't know where we're going to get a job. We certainly have a general idea of where we want to, mm-hmm. But we can only plan for things that we can. So what I would recommend is, say, pick an area. What's the average apartment cost in the Midwest? You can probably Google that information. But whatever the average apartment cost is in that area, you need double that. And that goes back to that short-term saving. That's where you can get those resources from. If you have been saving a couple bucks along the way all through college, it'll add up quickly. You'll have a couple $1,000s saved up for those types of things. If you want to be in the South or you want to be on the West Coast, it's going to be a little different than the Midwest in terms of prices. If you want to be in the upper East Coast, like New York, it's going to be way more. If you want to be in the Bay Area, it's going to be a lot more, right? So you just have to know, generally, what's the average cost of an apartment in those areas, and you just need double that.
So in terms of, one big piece of advice for these outgoing state officers, what would you say that is, the number one they need to keep in mind as they make this transition out of state office into what's next for them?
Honestly, the biggest piece of advice that I have is to find someone, or you believe has a really good handle on their finances, somebody that you want to be like from a financial perspective. That's really first and foremost, is model your behavior after people that emulate what you want to be. It's really that simple in terms of an overarching theme. To get to the specifics, I think budgeting is really helpful using technology, because if you do it any other way, you'll never stick to it. So leveraging that technology, living within your means. I know we talked about it, but I can't stress it enough. If you don't have it, wait, really begin to establish credit. Don't be afraid of credit. Get a credit card. If you don't have one, sign up for one and get one. Don't be afraid of them. If you need to establish credit, you do that through credit card. Don't let them raise your credit limit. Keep it very low. That way you can, you don't get in trouble with it. It's not something you want to use to build on. It's not something you want to use to buy a bunch of things and then have more time to pay it back. Not it at all. You always want to carry a balance from month to month. That's how you build credit. If you buy like your groceries and your credit card and then you pay it off at the end of every month, that doesn't help your credit. You actually need a balance that you carry forward. And I know you'll be paying a little bit of interest, but that's just the rule to the game. Just don't keep a big balance on there so you're not paying a bunch of interest. I don't care if it's $50 that you carry over month to month. Make sure you do it. That's how you build credit, which is really how you kind of establish that. And just become a saver. Become a frugal saver. I don't know. Those are my kind of general overarching themes if I had to boil it down.
That's great. Thank you so much, Elio, for all of your insight into finances and for talking through budgeting and student loans and everything in between today. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. And if I will throw this out there as a resource. I mean, I love this stuff. I really do. It's what I do for a living. If somebody wants to contact me, you know, feel free to do so. Have them, you can pass along my contact info, have them feel free to call me, email me, reach out to me. I'd love to chat with anybody for 10, 15 minutes, an hour if we have to kind of talk through their situation and get some advice. I don't mind doing it.
Yeah, that'd be great. What's your email address or Twitter handle?
My best email, the best way to contact me is probably via email, which is going to be my first and last name at gmail.com. So that's ElioChiarelli at gmail.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Elio.
You got it. Take care.
Finances are tough. Some of you, your parents may still be helping out a lot financially. Some of you may be totally out on your own. Maybe you have a job or you don't, or you are completely relying on scholarships, or you haven't even thought about applying for scholarships. Regardless of your situation, what are the steps you need to take today? Is it going to see what your bursar situation is looking like? Are you applying for scholarships? Is there a job you applied for that you need to follow up on? Is there a store you need to stay away from? Remember, we have to be on top of our game financially to have the freedom to do and make important purchases, do fun things with friends, to mentally be able to do well in whatever we put our mind to. It takes a lot of self-discipline to be smart with our money, but identifying those holes in our pockets and doing what we need to do to sew them up will quite literally pay off in the end. You can check out more Reconsidered resources online or talk to your state staff for more guidance on using the skills we gained during our state officer experience. Thank you so much for listening in today. We hope to have you back next time as we keep reconsidering what our state officer experience can do for us in the years to come. Let's consider that reconsidered.